Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Asiri, and each week I interview military veterans about their civilian career. Today is episode number 90 with Dan Pankowski.
You know, not every conversation that you have should end up with a hiring yes or no decision at the end of it. You've got to spend some time going out there and finding out what's out there. You know, the right job is out there for everybody. It's a matter of us finding it.
Well, a few reasons to listen to today's episode. Dan has been a recruiter for the last 10 plus years, working with companies like Amazon, KPMG, Hewlett-Packard, Booz Allen Hamilton, lots of really, really great companies. So first of all, if you're thinking about recruiting, if you're wondering what that looks like, or maybe that's the right fit for you, it's great to listen to hear Dan's experience and see if that might be a job you'd be interested in. Second of all, because he's worked with so many veterans and because he's worked with so many great companies, he's got a very unique perspective about interviewing, about applying to jobs, about finding the right fit for you. Today's episode is sponsored by Audible.com. It's a great way to listen to books on the go while you're driving, while you're running, while you're working out. I make use of Audible quite a bit. There are three books that Dan mentions today. Networking is a Contact Sport, The Five Love Languages, and we also talk about Big Magic. All three of those are available on audible.com. You can get a free Audible book with a trial at beyondtheuniform.io/books, where you'll also find other books that have been recommended by veterans on this show. So with that, let's dive in to my interview with Dan Pankowski. Well, joining me today in Dallas, Texas is Dan Pankowski. Dan, welcome to Beyond the Uniform.
Thank you, Justin. It's a pleasure to be here today.
So for listeners, I wanted to give a quick background on Dan. He is the manager of sourcing for all the hourly roles at Marriott in the U.S. He has worked in a variety of recruiting capacities, including Amazon, KPMG, Hewlett-Packard, and Booz Allen Hamilton, to include leading and launching many of the veteran recruiting pipeline and initiatives. Dan started out as a corporal in the Marine Corps before going to the Naval Academy and then serving as a surface warfare officer. His last tour in the Navy was as an officer programs recruiter stationed at Penn State that got him hooked on recruiting. So Dan, to kick things off, at what point did you decide to leave the military and how did you approach that decision?
So the original plan was to be a lifer. I was that guy that started out in the Marine Corps recruiting office and said, I'm doing 20 years and you can't pull me away from here. Over time, I got some great experiences and opportunities and really developed myself in ways that I didn't know existed before, both academically, physically, and professionally. And an opportunity came up where there was a reduction in force going on in the Navy, and just the timing of my life and that opportunity, it seemed to come together. And I said, absolutely, let's roll the dice and take a chance and try some new things. So it wasn't the long-term plan 10 years earlier, but things changed and situations developed where it became the new plan. And it became a moment of opportunity to try something new and believe in myself.
And I always like to ask about the first job search out of the military and kind of what you learned through that. But it sounds interesting because it sounds like you got a taste of what you wanted to do before you even left the military, and that when you were at that recruiting station, you had this idea that, hey, I might want to actually do this on the other side. Is that how did that all come about?
Yeah, I never would have pictured myself as a recruiter in life. And I think most recruiters out there would probably tell you the same thing. No one goes to college to be a recruiter. There is no recruiting major or academic path to get there. It's something you discover and find out that you like it, and you make it work, and you turn it into your own career. You know, going into a role as a recruiter for the Navy, we've all heard the horror stories about, you know, life at a recruiting station and how stressful and overwhelming it can be. And some people enjoy that, and some people don't, and that's okay. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the pace. I enjoyed the impact on people's lives. And as I would go out and talk to people in the community and even stand at job fairs at the Navy table to get some interest from the college students. I was talking to the people at the table standing next to me, and I found out that they were real recruiters for real companies, and this was their full-time job. And I said, heck, I want to do that. So I started talking to them a little bit and finding out more and more about what life as a recruiter was like, and I found out I'm going to like this. And it became a new passion for mine. You know, otherwise, I started out, I was motor transport in the Marine Corps. I was driving ships in the Navy. Neither of those, when you put them on paper, neither of those point anywhere near recruiting. But it became an object of desire. I said, I like the things that we do. I like the impact it creates. I like the pace of it. I'm going to give it a shot. And then I had to go out and try to find that job as I got out. I was in a remote, it was a whirlwind of adventure for me when I got out, because I was in a remote duty station location, State College, Pennsylvania, right outside of Penn State University. There's not a whole lot of Navy personnel up there. Even as a lieutenant, I was probably the highest ranking naval person within 400 miles of the city. Not a lot of support. I had to drive down to Washington, D.C. to go through the TAP class. It was part of a reduction in force, so the whole process was very, very rapid and quick. Instead of knowing a year in advance I was getting out, I had probably about 2 months' notice. So everything needed to get accelerated. It was a fast, rushed, sloppy, clumsy process for me. You know, never had any idea I would transition. Hey, life plan, I'm going to be a lifer. I don't need to worry about that stuff. So it was a learning experience while I was doing it, which is always an adventure. I reached out. We didn't have LinkedIn. We didn't have the robust amount of materials that we see today online where I could sit at home and go through and learn it by myself. So I reached out to one of the placement firms that works with the transitioning military communities and went through their materials and learned how to go interview and leverage them and their relationships with businesses to get to the interviews. And I ended up getting an offer from one of the people I interviewed with through a placement firm. You know, looking back, I wouldn't go back and change anything. I wish I knew then some of the stuff I knew now. Whether or not I would have said yes to that first offer, I was just excited that, you know, hey, I went on interviews, I didn't get a few jobs, and then one came along that I said, hey, I kind of like it. They made me an offer. Heck yeah, let's do this. And off we went. And no regrets, but I look back and I'm like, man, you should have slowed down a little bit more, and here's some different things you could have done along the way to be even more competitive, but I don't think I'd go back and change anything.
And, you know, I'm so torn. There's like two different ways I want to go with this. One is just learning about your career and what it's like as a recruiter and what are indications that other veterans might want to do that. And then I also realize you've got this wealth of knowledge where you've worked with so many different people and helped them find jobs. And so maybe we'll start with that second piece first. But I'm wondering, you know, based on your own experience and based on all of the different veterans that you've worked with in your career, what are some common mistakes that you see veterans make in their job search and in that whole hiring process?
Oh, great question. And this is one that it's a constantly evolving answer, and there's probably never going to be a single right answer or a single line that you can draw to do the job search 100% correct every time, every moment, because every company has its own way of recruiting and interviewing and hiring people. And that's probably one of the mistakes that I see, you know, and we always hesitate to call that a mistake because it's you don't know what you don't know. So when you go into an organization, an interview there, and it goes well, but you don't get the job, and then you move on to the next organization, you're bringing with you that idea that the second company you're interviewing with should operate the same way. More often than not, it doesn't, and you'll find yourself stuck because, well, the company isn't asking me the right questions like that other place did, or the company isn't reviewing it in the same amount of time that that other place was. Different people have different roles at different companies, and that's something that we make a mistake on. Every company does it differently, and it's not a one-size-fits-all type solution. It leads into further discussion around, you know, not every conversation that you have should end up with a hiring yes or no decision at the end of it. You've got to spend some time going out there and finding out what's out there. You know, the right job is out there for everybody. It's a matter of us finding it. Majority of the time, we don't even know that company exists to be able to go get that right job at that location. If you spend the time to figure out, you know, really talk to yourself and figure out what do you want to do and what motivates you and figure out what your end goal is, then it's a lot easier to go out and look for it. Along the way, you're going to be having conversations with different people that are not the hiring authority. You can use them to learn more information. You can use them to build the relationship to get to that hiring decision maker so that you can have that final conversation about whether or not it's the right spot for you. I think one of the big mistakes I always see is people are too quick to cast off and kind of push to the side the people that aren't the final decision maker in the process. People are always happy to talk about who they are and what they do and why they work for who they work. And we're so laser focused on, I have to get to the hiring manager and I have to get that final interview, that I don't care what anybody else says about the organization or advice they offer me, because they're not the hiring manager. Every book I read, every talk I hear says, I need to find the hiring manager, and all the rest of you can go pound sand and wait for me to get back with you. Reality, you know, you've got to take the time to learn about all kinds of different facets of the organization. What you think of, what in the military, what we think of as an operations manager is probably very likely vastly different than what an operations manager is at the bank down the street or at the department store across town. They have operations managers, but it's a very different role. And we've got to take the time to learn that so that we know what job we're going to be going after and we spend our energy smartly.
I love that thought of leveraging the interactions with someone who's not a hiring manager to have those, you know, coffee chats or phone calls or just those intel gathering conversations where you get to know more about a role or an organization in a low to no risk scenario. And, you know, I think that applies in so many different ways in a sales context. You know, there's so many times when I would talk to someone in an organization who has nothing to do with purchasing our software, but I could get a lay of the land and get a feel for things so that when I do talk to the person who's actually buying, I'm so much more equipped to be able to speak their language and use the same terminology and phrase things in a way that's going to land well. And it sounds like, you know, what you're describing is doing that in a hiring scenario too, of like getting to know people at the organization, finding friendly people, finding other veterans there, finding someone who will take a phone call or grab coffee with you and give you some advice so that when you are in that spot where you're evaluated with the hiring manager, you've got a little bit more of that homework done to be able to make a good positive impression and have a higher probability of being hired.
Absolutely, 100% agree and correct, my friend. Mm. It's, you know, and on top of all that, you're building an ally, right? If you read, anybody that reads about recruiting and hiring in America today, the number one source of hire is employee referrals. Mm. You get hired through your network. So the more people that you know and that know you and what you're looking for that are willing to vouch for you, the more likely you are to find your next job. Hiring new jobs open and close every day in any company. Even current organization, there's probably 3,000 jobs posted right now open today. Tomorrow, there could be 3,100 open jobs. The day after that, there could be 2,400 open jobs. And they're probably not all the same jobs day after day, because as one job gets hired, another job opens up. The more robust and informed your network is and the more people that you know, That's another set of eyes out there looking for you. That's your forward observer post, right? They're in the company, and they know where the next opportunity is opening up, and they can stick their hand in the air and say, you know, I know this guy named Dan who would be perfect for this job that we're talking about adding to the team. We always talk about, there's always the comments out there, you know, the job was posted and they already had somebody in mind, but they had to post the job for legal reasons or compliance reasons. But it's so not fair because they already had somebody in mind. So my challenge to all the men and women in transition is be that person that they opened the job up for. Build your network, grow those relationships, build that trust with people so that when they are having their internal meetings and saying, in the next 2 months, we're going to grow our team by 6 people, and here's what they're going to be doing. That's 2 months for your network to follow back up with you and, hey, we're open on a spot. I think you'd be great for it. Mm-hmm. Now, when that job gets posted, you're the guy they posted that job for. They've got their eyes on you already, ready to have you join the team and go through the interview process. That's what we can use our network for. And that's why we go out and meet people. And it's not always, hey, I need that job today. If you don't have a job that you're hiring for today, I don't want to talk with you. You never know what tomorrow's going to bring.
That doesn't mean
you have to be best friends and trade Christmas cards and presents on your kids' birthdays with them every year. But you need to maintain that working relationship.
Yeah, I mean,
it's check-in. It's great.
Yeah, it's so many – man, that's so true. And I'm just thinking of all the interviews I've done where that's exactly true, where that referral was how they got their first or second or third or fourth job. Like at some point in their career, it played a role. In particular, I'm thinking of an interview I did with Sam Bond, who worked at Bain and then Coca-Cola and then as a general manager at Lyft, the ride-sharing app. And, you know, he talked about when he was at Coca-Cola, he was routinely having lunch or coffee with old colleagues from Bain. And yes, partly because he liked them and partly just to keep that network alive. And it was exactly on one of those friendly coffees with one of his friends that he talked about, you know, an opportunity at Lyft, and that ultimately led to him applying for and getting the job. And it's these fortuitous encounters, and it's not, you know, it's not the extreme. It doesn't seem like it's the extreme of always checking in with people for the sole purpose of seeing if you can get something out of it. And it's not, like you said, it's not like you're buddy-buddy with everyone in the world, but it's that in-between of just being communicative and keeping the communication channels open so that I love the way you put it. So it's like when the opportunity arises, you're one of the people who's top of mind.
Yeah, you're never going to hear about it unless your friends tell you a lot of times. Mm. And you keep those working relationships strong. I'll plug a book that I really, really enjoy, and that is called Networking is a Contact Sport by Joe Sweeney. Mm. Reading that book, I thought I was a good networker. It took me to a whole nother level and made me go back and look at the way I run around in my network and say, hey, I do that really well. Here's an area I didn't even think about doing it this way. And I started to change my behaviors a little bit, and it just made my network that much stronger. And it's all about being involved, right? We all have that friend in the group that always needs a ride somewhere, that is always $5 short, that, you know, they're always asking for something. After a while, you stop hanging out with that person because you're not getting anything out of it unless you like giving him $5 every week or you like driving him to the store every week. Eventually you're going to break ties with that because you're not benefiting from it. And that's the way you have to treat your network. You're going to get back 3 times more than what you give.
I love that.
And remembering that, you've got to give, and it's not always transactional. It's not always this for that right there at the moment. It's you get a favor done now, 3 years down the road, you might be in a spot to return that favor. And that's why we keep in touch with each other.
Mm, I love that. I know I was looking at your profile and you've been involved with the Honor Foundation. And I was just speaking with their founder, Joe Musselman. And, you know, his story stands out where He literally was just, interacting with a former Navy SEAL and was just trying to find a way to help this person, and was looking at their resume and trying to help them out. And then word spread, and then it led to the Honor Foundation. And it just reminds me of like what you were saying is like not approaching this as like what can other people do for me, not approaching this as that guy that's always 5 bucks short, but like actively trying to help other people. And in general, that seems to work really well for then, it comes back around in some way, even when you're not doing it for that express purpose. And I'm wondering, I'd love to learn more about your career, but maybe to start with, how would you describe what you do as a recruiter, and in particular, like what your job typically would look like on an average day?
Oh, fun topic and really relevant topic because, like I mentioned earlier, recruiting is not something that you're going to go to school for or have a idea in high school even that you want to be a recruiter. It's a great opportunity for people in transition to make a career out of it. Like it doesn't require a whole lot of prerequisites in terms of formal education or significant levels of technical ability or training. This is a get or done type job. Now you get to leverage a lot of technology, and you have to be curious and constantly learning and evolving in a role as a recruiter. But a typical day in the life for those that are interested in being a recruiter for a corporation or an established company, your customer is the hiring manager. And that kind of works opposite what you think about when you're in transition looking for the job, where you say, the recruiters are here to find me and get me a job. The reality is, the recruiters are out looking for people to fill the job that their hiring manager has open. And if you're not able to fit that little square hole, as much as they want to help everyone all the time and share advice and knowledge, they don't always have the time because their livelihood depends on getting the right person for the job that they have open. So it's challenging in that regard because, we all hear it, the hiring managers, they want that purple squirrel that has 10 years of experience using a piece of technology that's only existed for 2 years. It's about managing expectations and being able to know the market that you recruit for and the skill profiles that you recruit for. You get to learn a lot about different areas that, you never would have known existed. Life example for me, I didn't know that supply chain and logistics were different things until I started recruiting for supply chain and logistics professionals back at Booz Allen Hamilton. The Marine in me said, well, they all kick empty boxes down the pier. That's supply chain and logistics. And then I had to learn that there's a difference. And I got to be exposed to some new industries and learn not how to do the job, but how to measure and gauge that someone else is capable of doing that job to be hired into the organization. But managing expectations, that's a key part of it. That's something that I think in the military we do a lot of every day, is making those commitments to get things done and then getting them done, or being able to go back and say, hey, we can't get this done. Here's some new, re this is what else I need to be able to get this done. And it holds true in recruiting all the time. You have to make that commitment. We need to hire X number of people by whenever. And we say, yep, absolutely. I'm a dog with a bone, and I'm going to go out and get it. And then we find out, you know what? I need some more resources. I need some more tools. I need to grow my team to handle this extra load. And then you've got to go ask for money, you've got to go ask for resources, and you've got to push that timeline back a little bit to get the job done. And you're doing that with multiple people across multiple areas of the company. Some days it feels like you're an international arms dealer working in a back alley with a trunk full of weapons, cutting a deal. Other days, it works really, really smooth, and everybody is on board with your ideas. But it's a constant series of fun new little problems that pop up one after the next, and it's never the same day twice in a row. And that's something that has always appealed to me. I probably never see the same situation more than twice. And it provides a little bit of variety in work that we're used to coming out of the military. You know, hey, every 18, 24 months, we pack our stuff in a box and we move. We go to a new unit. We go to a new command. As we get out, and I fell into this when I got out of my first job, at about 16 months, I started chomping at the bit, saying, hey, when's my detailer going to call me and tell me where I'm going next? Because, you know, boxes in the house, they're getting some dust on them. We got to pack up and move. And that never came. That phone call never happened. It finally dawned on me that, you know what, I'm responsible for me now. Holy cow. So I had to go and start the job search, only not because I wasn't happy, but because I felt like I had an itch that needed to be scratched because that's what I'm used to.
Yeah.
And it took a little bit of time for that to sink in for me. Like, after I made the switch, I was like, why did I switch? Like, what wasn't I happy about? And I couldn't put my finger on anything other than it was just time to switch. Mm. And now recruiting has given me that, where there's enough variety during the day and through the weeks that you never feel mundane or like it's Groundhog's Day where you're doing the same thing over and over again and it's just time to change because you can't mentally take it anymore of just running in place on that treadmill. Mm.
You know, one thing that jumps up out as you're saying this is I imagine that LinkedIn is a pretty big tool for you. And if that's true, I'm just wondering if you have any advice to veterans about how to best utilize LinkedIn in terms of their profile, but also just kind of LinkedIn etiquette when reaching out to people or any mistakes you've seen there.
Oh, I'm a huge fan of LinkedIn. It is I think everybody should have LinkedIn. The big reason behind it, the reason I love it, is I no longer have to keep a shoebox full of business cards from people I meet. And I don't have to tote this. At one point in my life, I had 3 shoeboxes of business cards. They were not in any order. Most of them were old. If somebody moved on to a new company, the phone number doesn't work anymore. The email address doesn't work anymore. Even worse, if I think back, you know what, I met somebody from that company, and his first name was Bill, but I can't remember his last name. I can't search through oodles and oodles of business cards looking for that needle in the haystack. LinkedIn lets me keep it all electronically sortable, and it stays fresh and relevant. So if somebody changes companies, I don't need to find their business card and throw it out and go get a new one. I have all their contact info for me right there. And you can follow them through their career regardless of where they were when you met the first time. From a use standpoint, LinkedIn, wonderful tool to be seen, right? The recruiters, the hiring managers out there, they don't know who you are. There's 200,000 veterans that get out every year. You're one in 200,000. This gives you a chance to personalize yourself a little bit and be in a spot that recruiters go to, which is probably the most important thing out there. Are you in a spot where recruiters can see you? The answer on LinkedIn, yes, recruiters live on LinkedIn. So put yourself in that spot to be seen. And then, you know, you've got a smartly written, error-free profile. As long make yourself look good. This is that one-page advertisement in a magazine that you read. You say, yo, that's a cool-looking product. I got to learn more about it. And then you go start digging for more information. LinkedIn gives us that chance to brand ourselves. I always tell everyone you should participate in general rule, make 2 comments a week in different discussions. Being on LinkedIn is good. You can have a great profile, but if you're not active, you're just a couple of kilobytes on a screen that doesn't participate, nobody sees you. When you join a place like the Veteran Mentor Network group on LinkedIn, probably the most active group on LinkedIn, and you start participating in discussions and sharing ideas and sharing comments, you're seen, you're heard. People take notice of that. Say, wow, this guy really has some smart ideas. He really articulates things well. He'd probably be a good fit in my company, or for the job I'm looking for, and he's active, he's engaging, he's not sitting back behind the scenes waiting for the world to give him whatever it is the world's going to give him and just kind of take it and deal with it. He's out there pushing hard. Recruiters see that. Hiring managers see that. The amount of friendships I've forged through just finding out that someone making a post on Facebook, on LinkedIn, and finding out that somebody else shares that same idea that I thought I was crazy for thinking, turned into some great long-lasting friendships. It's a great way to build a network because you get to find out, you know what, I'm not alone when I think about things like this, or I'm not alone when I think about this as a solution to that problem. You know, there's no rules on LinkedIn. If you really, the main rule, be polite. You know, no name calling, no being bratty and demanding. It's being polite. It's like being at a dinner party. You know, we just got to go out there and meet people and mingle and talk. And if that spark is there to continue the conversation, hey, go for it. Connect with each other. Pick up the phone. Call each other. It's people love that kind of stuff.
That's great. I'm wondering also, one thing I like to ask about is other resources. And I'm wondering if anything comes to mind. And I know you've already mentioned networking is a contact sport. I'm wondering if any other books or podcasts or websites or any other resources, in addition to Network as a Contact Sport and the Veterans Mentor Network on LinkedIn, that you would recommend to listeners.
You know, this one, I'll put one out there at the risk of sounding cheesy, because everybody is going to giggle when I say this. Go pick up a copy of The 5 Love Languages and read it. It's something that's probably not going to directly help your job search, but it's going to help you in your career, strengthening your relationships with people you work with. And it's a book based on the ways people like to be recognized and praised. Everyone has different ways they like to be recognized. And this is a book, I read it, and it kind of put things in perspective. Some people like the public recognition. Other people like the quiet, good job, hey, I saw you do that, in a handshake behind the file cabinet. Other people like a material reward, like a trip or a book or a dinner. Recognizing how people you work with like to be acknowledged is amazingly helpful. You will build allies. You will strengthen your network. People will be more apt to do things with you and do things for you because you respond to them in a way that they appreciate. And that would probably be my cheesy pitch for a book to read that at first glance I laughed at myself when I sat down to read it.
That's great. I mean,
but it was amazing.
I think that's awesome. It's you know, it's like another cheesy saying, but I like it, where it's like the golden rule is to do unto others as you would have them do unto you, but the platinum rule is to do unto others as they would have you do unto them. You know, and it's like realizing that, like, the way that I like recognition, the way that I like praise and positive feedback is very different than probably you want and everyone else wants. And so often I've seen that, where I've made that mistake where it's like, this is the reward I would want, and so I give that to an employee or team member, and that's not what they value at all. That's not what motivates them. And so I think that's a great advice of just learning more, that we all operate in different ways, and at least there's patterns that make it a little bit easier to figure out what are these, you know, 5 different ways that people relate and crave positivity, and to be able to give them the one that's going to energize them the most. I think that's really great advice. I'm wondering, you know, if you could give one piece of advice to someone who's currently on active duty about how they could best prepare for their civilian career or for that transition, what would you encourage them to do?
Great question. If you're on active duty right now, build your LinkedIn profile. Use it. You don't have to be chasing down recruiters and hiring managers right now. You know, hey, I'm out in 3 years. I want to start the conversations now. It's a little bit early in the game for that. But every at the end of each night, or at the breakfast table with your morning coffee, take 10 minutes and go through it. Connect with people you work with. And yes, the soldier, the sailor, the Marine, in your squad, in your fire team, down the hall in the barracks, across the hall, the passageway on the ship, connect with them. Because as your careers diverge from that moment, you never know when they're going, where your paths are going to cross again. Right? My roommate in college, hey, we spent 3 wonderful years together in a very close space. You know, we're good friends, and now he has gone his way in his career, and I've gone my way in my career, but we still keep in touch a little bit, and you never know when you're going to reconnect with people. Additionally, the people that you serve with right now, I said earlier, 200,000 people get out every year, maybe even a little bit more. The people you work with might get out before you. You've got a relationship with them now because you're already connected. You know, you might not be in the same unit when that person gets out, but through LinkedIn, you're going to see, oh, Steve got out and he works at this company. Well, I know Steve really well. I'll bet I can pick up the phone and give him a call and find out all about his transition, because the transition, the hiring, it's a constantly evolving process. It's constantly changing. There's new tools being developed every day. There's new processes being developed every day that are making the old ones obsolete and prehistoric that aren't in use anymore. So what better resource to talk to than somebody you know and have served with that's gone through the same thing that you're about to go through very recently? And we forget about that too often. We get out and we say, I have no network because I'm brand new to this company and I don't know anybody anywhere, and we forget about the amazingly close ties that we have created with people while we were in uniform. Those are friends for life, and we forget about that, and we forget that they too have evolved in their career, and they may be working at a competitor doing the same job. What a great person to ask for advice some days. And we've got to remember to connect with them so that we know when those moments occur. Probably the best advice I can give people right now, nail down your network now and add to it. It's a lot easier that way than trying to go back and think, you know, for me, boy, it's almost 25 years since I was a young Lance Corporal. I can probably remember 2 guys I served with. I could not go back and rebuild that network now. But had I done it then, you know, if LinkedIn was around then, certainly be in touch with them. Probably would have helped my transition out amazingly because I had people I could trust and listen to giving me advice.
That's great, man. Yeah, it is so much easier to maintain those things just through little tiny actions than this trying to overhaul and remember everyone you've met. It's true. It's like impossible to go back and do that.
Yeah, it's a little overwhelming at times. Mm.
Well, I always like to keep the last question more open-ended, and I know you've answered a lot around advice for people in their job search and lessons learned from your career, as well as what recruiting looks like. I wanted to give you space if there's anything else you wanted to share with listeners that we haven't covered. It could be about personal life or professional life, but what else would you want them to know?
Best advice that I had to learn the hard way. And this will speak to people that are getting out and you get to that first job and the first 3 months suck because they don't know who I am. They don't give me enough work. This isn't challenging to me. I don't understand it. I'm in over my head. Those are all normal feelings. And it will be shocking and surprising to learn that it doesn't matter if it's your first job out of the service, or if it's your 7th different job out of the service, those same feelings exist and those same frustrations exist every time you go to a new company. Just like when you change units in the military and you change employers on the civilian side, you have to find out who the network is at that new place. You find out who the problem solvers are for you. It's very rarely about your individual ability to perform in that job, and it's much more about you have to figure out who is there to help you and who is part of your team that you can turn to get things done that are outside of your control. The biggest challenge I have faced when I start somewhere new is I need to find out, you know, it's not that I don't know how to recruit, it's that I don't know where my cheese is inside the organization. I know what needs to be done. I have to spend time feeling helpless because I can't do it, and I don't know who to turn to get the authorization to do it, or to pay the bill to do it, or to set up the technology to do it. And you sit back and you go, I'm failing because I'm not getting this done. It's not because you don't know how to do it. It's not because you're underutilized. It's because you have to go out there and meet people around you and find out what they do so that they can then help you, because they're going to turn to you in very short order and say, hey, now that you know which way is up, it's time for you to start helping me. And having that network inside your organization and understanding the dynamics of the organization, it's painful and it's frustrating and it's overwhelming at times when you get into that first job. It doesn't change when you go from employer to employer either. We all suffer through that same few weeks of figuring out which way is up and drinking from the fire hose. And once you get through that, life gets a lot better. And we always see the huge statistics out there that, you know, 40, 50, 60% of veterans quit their first job within their first year. A lot of it has to do with that, I like to believe. It's that frustration of, I've spent 4, 8, 12, 20 years in the military. I know who to go to get things done, and things get done like clockwork because I know where to turn. Now we've got to learn we've got to relearn navigation. We've got to figure out who those same people are in our new organization and not get frustrated. And if you do that and you have that little bit of patience with yourself, you're going to find that you're going to be a little bit happier and a little bit more content once you lay out who your allies are in an organization to help you.
This is great, Dan. I appreciate your taking the time to share the advice that you've learned from a career of working with some incredible organizations and helping tons of people find their job. And I'll put for listeners, I'll put references in the show notes to the books and the different resources he mentioned as well. So thank you so much, Dan.
Oh, thank you for having me, Justin. This was an incredible opportunity, and I love listening to these as often as I can, and I love to see the people that you bring on here, because I've been out for a long time and done a lot of different jobs, but there's jobs that pop up on here and companies that I've never heard of before, and I go, I didn't know that existed. Boy, is that interesting.
Surface, surface, surface.
Thanks for listening. Three important notes before you go. First, Audible.com is offering a free audiobook for Beyond the Uniform listeners. I love Audible. I get 3 books a month, and it's a great way to use net, or no extra time, to polish off books while you run, drive, etc. If you go to beyondtheuniform.io/books, you'll not only find this offer, but you'll also find a list of every single book that has been recommended on this show. One in particular I'd recommend is The Hard Thing About Hard Things. This is a great story of determination and also a glimpse at what startups are really like. That's at beyondtheuniform.io/books. Second, there are so many great resources out there for veterans, it can be difficult to know all about them. That's why at beyondtheuniform.io/directory, you'll find a list of every single resource that's been mentioned on the show or that I've been able to find. You can also add your own if you find one I've missed. Lastly, I've put together several different free ebooks that provide data for veterans about their civilian career possibilities. This quantitative information serves as a great complement to the qualitative interviews I do each week. Go to beyondtheuniform.io, click on resources, and you'll be all set. Have a great week, and I'll be back next week with more interviews with military veterans about their civilian career.